Support for WPR comes from Wills on behalf of Wisconsin Public Libraries, offering access to ebooks, audiobooks, digital magazines, and more. Available with a Wisconsin Library Card at wisconsinsdigitallibrary.org. Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
In font circles, Matthew Carter is a god. He designed Verdana, the internet font. He also co-founded Bitstream, the first-ever digital foundry. If you've seen words on a computer screen, you've seen his fonts. But Carter had a long typeface history before he became the Verdana guy. He designed Bell Centennial, the phone book font. He was even co-designer of, arguably, the most ubiquitous font family in the world, Helvetica. Matthew Carter told Steve Paulson his font career started in the most traditional way.
Immediately I left high school in England, I went to spend a year in a printing works in the Netherlands. Enschede's was the name of them. And they still made their own type on the premises. This was very unusual. It might even have been unique. This is 1955. Most printers had given up doing that in the early part of the 16th century, but Enschede's had a proud tradition of designing and making their own type by very traditional means, by hand. So I spent this rather curious year sitting in the type foundry learning to cut punches in the way that type had been made for centuries. It's a rather difficult process, and in the course of a year, I didn't really get beyond a sort of journeyman proficiency, I think. But it was very interesting work, and I think it, if nothing else, it confirmed my interest in type and decided me to sort of follow that at a later time.
Now, it would seem to be a very long way from punch cutting at a foundry in the Netherlands to designing Verdana, the font of the internet, or is it?
Well, yes and no. I think that there is an awful lot about type design that remains the same independent of what tools you use to make it, what tools you use to set it, to reproduce it. The technology of type has changed a number of times since I've been involved in it. It went from three-dimensional metal to two-dimensional film, and then from film to digital, and then to the desktop, and so on. A lot of it does stay the same. I don't know, 80 or 90%, I would think, of what goes into a typeface remains about the same. But then there are circumstances, technical circumstances in particular, where the technology does affect the design to some extent. And I think that was certainly true of Verdana, which was, you know, designed for use on computer screens, which was a very different matter from cutting punches for type on paper, letterpress printing. Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me about the process of designing Verdana. First, why did Microsoft see the need to design a font that would work for the internet?
Well, the reason that screen fonts exist at all as a separate category of type is that the resolution of computer monitors, computer screens, is very coarse, at least in relationship to what you get off a printer. My laser printer at home, which is not a new one, but that has a resolution of 1,200 dots to the inch. There are very few screens, or at least affordable screens, that are more than 100 dots to the inch. So reproducing type or anything with any detail on a computer screen is difficult. And it was more difficult in the mid-90s when this project that became Verdana got started.
So was the key to this creating more spacing between the characters to make them easier to read?
Yes, I think that's true. Up to this point, of course, all the fonts that you saw on the screen had been adapted from pre-existing printer fonts, obviously. But what Microsoft wanted to do in this case was to reverse the priorities. In other words, it was already becoming clear, I think, in the mid-90s that more and more people were reading and writing on the screen and only printing perhaps occasionally or even never. So the old idea that what was important in type was what came out of the printer, you know, when the toner hit the wood pulp, was rather giving way to the idea that it was more important that type should be as legible as possible on the screen, with all of the problems about resolution and rounding and so on. But they had the idea, if rather than starting from a pre-existing font, maybe the best way was to start fresh and say, OK, the main priority is text sizes on the screen. Obviously, the type will have to be printable. Technology can't prevent it from being printable. It's a very good thing. But instead of having the printing aspect of it, the prime one, it should be the on-screen aspect that has the main priority. So that was the brief that was given to me. And yes, you're perfectly right. I mean, as I got to work on the job, I found that to make a different O or a different N was rather difficult. But what I did concentrate on was getting the spacing more regular so that as you're reading at these text sizes, letters don't collide with one another or you don't get big gaps between letters that look like word spaces and so on. You know, I tried to think of Verdana at the paragraph level, not as the individual letter or even the word level. I had to think about spacing between characters and the spacing between words as much as I had to think about the positive forms of the letters.
Now, of course, the other thing that we all do now is we print lots of stuff off of our computers. I'm assuming that had to be a factor as well. I mean, this Verdana had to not only work on the screen, but it had to be able to be printed as well.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. We all knew that. And of course, it has happened. I mean, people, as you say, have used it. I'm sitting in a booth here at WBUR, and someone's left a piece of paper on the desktop here with the station identification wording and the underwriting intros and so on. It's all in Verdana. So I think, yes, it is.
that must make you feel, I must say, kind of proud, right? I mean, wherever you go, you're going to see your creation.
I don't know. I don't always recognize the typefaces I've designed. But yes, I mean, it provided they're used in a good way. It's a positive experience, I would say, by and large. Yes.
I would think more than that. It's kind of invisible or taken for granted by everyone, but it's everywhere you turn. This is the thing that you made.
Yes. But then again, I don't think you get into something like type design if you have, I don't know, the kind of ego that needs to recognize your work everywhere or have other people recognize it everywhere. I mean, it is still largely an anonymous business. I mean, you know, thanks to personal computers, more people now know what a font is than they ever did in the past. You can have a perfectly intelligent conversation about fonts with a 9-year-old nowadays and so on, you know. But they still don't necessarily know there's any human agency involved in designing and making fonts. They assume they sort of materialize out of the software ether in some way. So I don't, you know, yes, it's type designers, you know, we produce raw material, really. It goes out there into the world. We are hostages to whoever uses it. And, you know, these can be typographers, graphic designers, publishers, whoever. Or, you know, someone at a radio station printing out a document here. I don't know these people. I have no contact with them necessarily. It's a sort of odd sense of remote collaboration with such people. But, you know, we are hostages. I mean, you can use a typeface well and you can use it badly.
What does it mean to use a typeface badly?
Well, there are ways that you can misuse a typeface. I mean, I'm trying to think of an example as I sit here. I mean, one thing I do notice sometimes, which I must admit annoys me, in magazines, often very well-designed magazines, they will take some quote from the text and they'll pull it out and they'll reverse it out of a block of black or dark color, or indeed reverse it out of a photograph or an illustration. And they'll use the same type at the same size as they print the black on white text. But once you knock it out of a dark background, very often the type will sort of get eroded. It will break down. And I always feel that that's sort of unfair to the typeface. You know, you're setting it up to fail. The person who is designing the page should have had enough typographic knowledge to realize that a typeface that works extremely well, maybe black on white, would not hold up well white on black. And they should use a bolder weight or use a different typeface and so on. So these things you do see, and you wish someone hadn't done that. But, you know, it's a minority of cases, I must say, you know, having done this for a very long time, the overall effect of seeing my work in use, you know, if I pick up a book jacket or record cover or something rather than use as a face of mine, it's usually a gratifying experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it sounds like your philosophy is basically, it's very functional. I mean, there's no such thing as the perfect font. It all depends on the use that it's put to.
By and large, for me, that's true. I think a lot of other designers could be sitting here in this seat talking to you who would take a very different view of that. I'm not the sort of designer who, I mean, if I sit in front of a blank screen or a blank sheet of paper, some wonderful inspiration doesn't descend like a bolt from the blue, you know, as it does for some fortunate designers. I'm more the sort of designer who is given some sort of problem to solve. You know, I'm given a technical situation, a brief that involves some research and so on. And then I plod through this progressively, stage by stage, and figure out an answer. So I tend to be interested, perhaps this goes back to what we talked about at the beginning, the fact that I began by being able to make type. I'm always interested in how it is made and how it's reproduced and so on. You know, people think it's strange that I'm interested in the typography of telephone directories or newspapers or news magazines and so on. But I am. I find those information-bearing designs, both in print and on screen, to be extremely interesting.
And we should point out that you're also the designer of Bell Centennial, the phone book font.
That is perfectly true. And I think that had a good deal of influence on me when I came to work on Verdana. I mean, the problems are different. The problem with the phone book, of course, is the type is tiny. It's 6-point and it's printed very high speed in kerosene and lamp black on newsprint, you know, and then thrown away at the end of the year. Verdana for the screen is a slightly different problem, but it's related. Both of them are threshold problems. In both cases, you are trying to make type perform as well as it can in a difficult typographic environment, I would say. So yes, the work that I mean, it was a long time before I did Verdana that I did Bell Centennial, but I'm very glad that I had that experience. Because I did learn some things doing Bell Centennial. It took a long time to do it, and I had a lot of support from AT&T and the Bell companies when it took a couple of years. And I learned a lot about the nature of digital type and so on when I was doing that. And that, I think, did stand me in good stead when I came to do Verdana.
Now, I have one last question before you go. Sure. IKEA recently changed their font from Futura, yes. which had been just a core part of their brand, their identity.
Yes.
They changed it to your font, Verdana, and this has provoked outrage among a lot
don't
of
call
people.
It, don't call it my font. You'll think I was to blame. Yes.
There was this instantaneous backlash, especially by people who were making all kinds of comments on the internet. What do you make of this controversy?
Well, it was interesting. I mean, it was fascinating, first of all, that the mainstream media picked up on it. I think the first I heard about this was an article in Time magazine, of all places, referring to what was going on online. Well, in one way, I'm a bad person to talk about this because until this all blew up, I had never seen an IKEA catalog. I must be the only person who owns a home on the planet who hadn't seen an IKEA, but I hadn't. So I don't have, you know, 50 years of emotional involvement in Futura as their typeface. When I did pick up the 2010 edition, the one that's set in Verdana, I really sort of couldn't see what the problem was in a way. But I've lived through enough magazine and newspaper redesigns to realize that people do get very attached to typefaces and they do react when they're changed. Of course, you don't hear from the people who like it, or very seldom, and you don't hear from the majority of people who probably don't even notice, you know. You do hear from the people with a grievance. These are the people who say, you know, words can't express my disgust at seeing Verdana in the IKEA catalog or something like that. But as I say, you know, type designers are hostages and you've got to take your lumps occasionally as well as the better experiences. It'll probably simmer down in time, you know.
Matthew Carter is the designer of Verdana, the internet font. He spoke with Steve Paulson.